this is Randall Rickman for North Carolina Reading Service. And for this hour, I'll be reading to you from Time Magazine. And welcome back with us. This issue is dated November 25th, 2019. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. And I'm Randall Rickman. We go right to the beginning of the magazine so we can include the regular one-page feature for the record, a one-page collection of news items, small ones, each one illustrated by a two-color illustration or a quotation in bold or a combination of the two. In the upper right corner of the page is a story illustrated by the monetary amount in bright red, $46,000. Caption explains, record price paid at auction in Japan for a snow crab on November 7th, $46,000. Caption goes on to say, the crab weighed 2.7 pounds and was 5.74 inches wide. 5.74 inches wide, 2.7 pounds, $46,000. In the middle right margin of the page is a story illustrated by a quotation from Sarah Palin, former nominee for vice president. Sarah Palin, in a November 12th radio interview on her husband Todd's filing for divorce, and the quotation from Sarah Palin, quote, we're going through counseling now, so it's not over. Unquote. In the bottom right corner of the page is another edition of the feature within a feature, Bad Week, Good Week. Bad Week, Planes. A passenger jet slid off the runway at O'Hare International Airport because of snowy conditions. Under Good Week, Trains. A year's worth of stats showed that a record proportion of passengers between London and Glasgow took trains, not planes. Running along the bottom center of the page is a story illustrated by the statistic 15,000. Caption explains, age in years of traps containing the remains of at least 14 mammoths found in Tultepec, Mexico, 15,000 years. Caption goes on to say, the discovery was announced on November 6th. Remains of at least 14 mammoths, 15,000 years. In the lower left corner of the page is a story illustrated by a quotation from Nigel Farage, announcing on November 11th that his Brexit party will not run against UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson's Conservatives in the December 12th election. And the quotation in bold black from Nigel Farage, quote, we now have a Leave alliance, unquote. In the middle left margin of the page is a story illustrated by a quotation from Burton Pretty on Top, Crow Tribal Advisor on a 2,000-year-old bison killing ground damaged by coal mining, according to documents detailed on November 9th by the Associated Press. And the quotation in bright red from Burton Pretty on Top, Crow Tribal Advisor, quote, it was a shrine or temple to us. Unquote. The upper left corner of the page is a story illustrated by a quotation from Dara Khosrowshahi, Uber CEO, comparing Saudi Arabia's role in the murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi to a car accident. To Axios on HBO on November 10th, the quotation from Uber CEO Dara Khosrowshahi, quote, people make mistakes. It doesn't mean that they can never be forgiven, unquote. Caption goes on to say, he later said he misspoke. In the upper center of the page is a story illustrated by quotation in all caps, bold black, from Nikki Haley, former UN ambassador. Nikki Haley to CBS News on November 11 on former Trump administration officials who she says in her new book, With All Due Respect, tried to recruit her to help circumvent the president's policies. Quote, the quotation from Nikki Haley, former UN ambassador, quote, to undermine a president is really a very dangerous thing, unquote. And that is the entire content of the For the Record page. That brings us to the major section that begins the magazine, The Brief. The subsection here is The Bulletin, where the headline is, Spain's new far-right rides nationalist wave to greater power. Article by Sierra Nugent. For 44 years, far-right parties were anathema in Spain, thanks to the memory of Francisco Franco's fascist dictatorship. But after elections on November 10th, ultra-conservative Vox became the third largest party in the country's legislation. For clarity, Vox is spelled V-O-X. Sierra Nugent goes on to write, center-left Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez hoped the election, Spain's fourth in 4 years, would break a parliamentary deadlock. But voters' fatigue and nationalist clashes over the semi-autonomous Catalan region gave Vox a boost and further fragmented the legislature, leaving Sanchez little to celebrate. Sierra Nugent here lists three categories. Surge to the right. Vox politicians entered Spain's parliament for the first time only in April, but the party more than doubled its seats this round, winning 52. That leaves them behind only the main center-right People's Party, parenthetically PP, with 88, and Sanchez's Socialists, parenthetically PSOE, at 120. Vox resembles other hard-right parties that have surged across Europe in recent years. Under the slogan, Spaniards First, its leader, Santiago Abascal, has pledged to deport undocumented migrants, called for the repeal of Spain's gender violence law, and urged the end of public funding for abortions. Second category, Catalan crisis. The main driver of Vox's success is its firm opposition to Catalan independence. The region of 7 million voted to secede in a 2017 referendum considered illegal by Madrid. In October, Spain's Supreme Court sentenced 9 Catalan leaders to up to 13 years in prison for their role in the poll. Mass protests ensued. Vox has long called for a ban on political parties advocating regional independence, and after the protests, Abascal cast himself as the protector of, quote, national unity, unquote, a priority of Spain's right wing since the Franco days. Third and last category, rising prospects. The Catalan question is likely to only grow in importance as Sanchez now attempts to form a government. On November 12th, the PSOE struck a preliminary coalition deal with far-left Podemos, which has 35 seats. But Sanchez remains 21 lawmakers short of a majority, which may leave him no choice but to ask for support from small regional independence parties. They will want concessions on Catalonia, but with Vox now establishing itself as a major force in Parliament, resistance to that will be stronger than ever. Governing Spain just got even harder. Story by Sierra Nugent. On this page at the right margin is the regular feature news ticker. Three news items stacked one on top of the other. Top item, suit against gunmaker goes forward. A lawsuit brought by relatives of the victims and a survivor of the 2012 Sandy Hook shooting against Remington Arms will proceed after the Supreme Court rejected a defense appeal on November 12th. A 2005 law has shielded gun makers from suits over crimes involving their weapons. Second item in the middle, violence escalates in Hong Kong. Police warned that the rule of law in Hong Kong was, quote, on the brink of collapse, unquote, November 12th, after a week in which one pro-democracy protester was shot by security forces and a pro-Beijing demonstrator was set on fire. Both were hospitalized. Pro-democracy protests in the territory have been ongoing for half a year. Third item at the bottom. Bloomberg prepares to enter race. On November 8th, former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg sent filings to join Alabama's presidential primary, signaling an intention to make a late entry into an already crowded Democratic field. Former two-term Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick has also recently made moves suggesting he may run. Moving ahead and still on the brief, we are now at the milestones page. The lead entry. Under died James Le Mesurier, humanitarian pioneer. Observance by Joseph Hinks, who writes, as a British Army officer serving in Northern Ireland and the Balkans, James Le Mesurier saw what can happen to civilians in conflict zones. So, in 2014, he founded a humanitarian group, Mayday Rescue, to help build emergency response capacity in such places, in part by training Syria's white helmets, who've been credited with saving thousands of lives there. The white helmets, officially known as Syria Civil Defense, gained renown in 2016, when an Oscar-winning documentary showed volunteers targeted by airstrikes as they carried out daring search and rescue missions. In the miasma of Syria's complex war, as the government attacked civilians, rebels coagulated under jihadist banners, and foreign states threw their weight behind disparate militias, the sight of ordinary Syrians risking their lives to drag babies from the rubble offered a glimmer of hope. That year, Queen Elizabeth awarded Le Mesurier an Order of the British Empire for his service to Syrian civilians. The 48-year-old was found dead near his Istanbul apartment on November 11th, per Turkish state media, which reported that police believed he may have fallen to his death. Only days earlier, Russia had escalated a disinformation campaign accusing him of being a UK intelligence agent with terrorist connections. The White Helmets say they are neutral, but Moscow claims the group is a Western propaganda tool. A speculation swirled about the circumstances of his death. Former colleagues focused on Le Mesurier's tireless work ethic, compassion, charisma, and, as the White Helmets put it in a statement, his humanitarian efforts that, quote, Syrians will always remember, unquote. Observance by Joseph Hinks on James Le Mesurier. This is accompanied by a full-color, candid headshot. The caption says, Le Mesurier talks to the media in 2015 during a training exercise in Turkey, where he lived. And in the photograph, he is wearing a bright red firefighter's headgear. In the right margin, under died Bernard J. Tyson, health visionary. Observance by Alice Park. She writes, even after he reached the peak of corporate achievement as CEO of one of the largest healthcare and insurance companies in the U.S., Bernard Tyson never forgot where he began. He frequently credited his father, a preacher and carpenter, with seeding the strong sense of justice he brought to his leadership of Kaiser Permanente, based in Oakland, California. After Tyson's sudden death in his sleep on November 10th, at 60, health industry leaders mourned the loss of, quote, a passionate leader, unquote, quote, a keen mind, unquote, and, quote, a good friend and trusted peer, unquote. Under Tyson's tenure, Kaiser became a model for innovative ways to improve access to care. He rose to CEO in 2013, a year before the Affordable Care Act was implemented, and remained a staunch supporter of the law's mission to expand health care access for the under and uninsured. At the recent Time 100 Health Summit, he was resolute about continuing that mission. Quote, if we are going to focus on affordability, we have to all be in, unquote, he said. Quote, we all have to work together to create a different kind of value proposition that is going to make care more affordable, unquote. Observance by Alice Park on Bernard J. Tyson, CEO of Kaiser Permanente. That is accompanied by a half-length full-color photo with no caption. Under threatened, the deportation of ISIS members to their home countries unless Western nations stop sanctioning them. Threatened by Turkey on November 12th. Threatened by Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. Under launched 60 Starlink satellites by SpaceX on November 11th, raising concerns among astronomers about whether crowded skies might threaten research. Under ruled in favor of building a Hindu temple on the site of a demolished mosque in Ayodhya by India's Supreme Court, ruled by India's Supreme Court on November 9th. And caption again for clarity, ruled in favor of building a Hindu temple. Caption goes on to say, on November 9th, the mosque's 1992 destruction sparked religious violence that left 2,000 people, mostly Muslims, dead. Under named, Pete Alonso of the New York Mets as National League Rookie of the Year, named on November 11th. Under hospitalized, former President Jimmy Carter, 95, on November 11th. He underwent surgery to reduce pressure on his brain. Under announced, that Instagram will try hiding like tallies for some U.S. users, announced by company head Adam Mosseri on November 8th. Under rejected, an Iowa inmate's claim that after he, quote, momentarily died, unquote, and was resuscitated at a hospital, he's completed his life sentence for murder. And the caption says, rejected by a state appeals court. The entire content of the Milestones page. On the facing page is the regular feature, Good Question. And here the headline is the question, has the CDC finally figured out what's making vapors sick? And vapors is spelled V-A-P-E-R-S. This item written by Jamie Ducharme. Since the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, parenthetically CDC, first announced an outbreak of vaping-related lung diseases in August, the agency has faithfully provided updates as the number of people diagnosed with these illnesses ticks up and up, totaling 2,051 sicknesses and 39 deaths as of November 5th. But those reports have come with frustratingly few clues as to why vapers are getting sick and dying, until a breakthrough this month. Quote, for the first time, unquote, CDC Principal Deputy Director Dr. Ann Shushaw said on a November 8th call with reporters, quote, we have detected a potential toxin of concern, vitamin E acetate, unquote. The CDC previously found that most patients vaped products containing the marijuana compound, THC. But it wasn't clear why these formulas were making people sick. Oily vitamin E acetate, which is sometimes added to cannabis vaping solutions to dilute their THC content, may be the, or at least an, answer. The CDC tested lung fluid from 29 people with EVALI, that is spelled, all caps, E-V-A-L-I, the agency's abbreviation for e-cigarette or vaping product use-associated lung injury, EVALI. And go back for clarity and repeat that without the parentheticals. The CDC tested lung fluid from 29 people with EVALI and vitamin E acetate turned up in every single sample. Other suspected substances, such as mineral and plant oils, weren't found in any. THC was detected in 82% of the samples, and nicotine appeared in 61%, which suggests many people are using both. Some EVALI patients, however, have reported using only nicotine, which leaves open the possibility that some non-THC formulas could be contaminated. And before we get to these last paragraphs, for clarification, EVALI, which is all caps, E-V-A-L-I, stands for e-cigarette or vaping product use-associated lung injury, EVALI. Vitamin E acetate is commonly and safely used in dietary supplements and beauty products. Inhaling vitamin E acetate, however, seems to be very different from ingesting or topically absorbing it. More research is needed to determine exactly how the additive could be causing harm, Shushaw said, but oil inhalation may contribute to the pneumonia-like symptoms reported by EVALI patients, such as shortness of breath, coughing, and, in serious cases, fatal lung injury. Despite the breakthrough, the CDC's investigation isn't over. The 29 samples tested represent fewer than 2% of the people who have gotten sick, and the CDC warns that multiple chemicals may be to blame for illnesses. Irina Stepanov, an associate professor at the University of Minnesota's School of Public Health, adds that people use vaping products in varied quantities, durations, and combinations, and answers may lie somewhere within that complicated matrix. Quote, I don't think we are ready yet to say that this is the only reason people get sick, unquote, she says. The CDC urges Americans to avoid THC vaping products, particularly those purchased on the street or from unknown sources. Young people, including the nearly 30% of American high schoolers who vape, should never use e-cigarettes, the agency adds. With so many questions outstanding, the Ivali outbreak is far from solved. Ivali, E-V-A-L-I-E, L-I, Ivali. Sharing this page is another edition of News Ticker, once again in sidebar form, and again three news items stacked on top of each other. Top item, wildfires rage across eastern Australia. More than a million hectares of brush fires were burning in New South Wales and Queensland, Australia, as of November 12th, as high winds drove flames across the dry landscape. At least three people were confirmed dead and 178 homes destroyed as firefighters warned the worst was yet to come. Middle item, Nike to investigate abuse claims. Sportswear company Nike said November 8th that it will launch an inquiry into claims of physical and emotional abuse at its now-shuttered Oregon project. Runner Mary Kane alleged in the New York Times that she suffered broken bones because pressure to lose weight compromised her health. Mary Kane, Kane is spelled C-A-I-N. Bottom item, Israel kills top Palestinian militant. At least 23 people were killed in Gaza during cross-border exchanges of fire after a November 12th Israeli airstrike killed Baha Abu al-Atta, a senior member of the militant group Palestinian Islamic Jihad. The group receives training and funds from Iran. Al-Atta's wife was also killed, and two of their children were reportedly injured. Moving ahead, we now come to the next major section, The View. The subsection here is Medicine, where the headline is How to Reduce Medical Errors, written by Kathleen Sutcliffe. Time notes, Sutcliffe is a professor of business and medicine at Johns Hopkins University and a co-author of Still Not Safe, Patient Safety and the Middle Managing of American Medicine, forthcoming from Oxford University Press. We will review that information at the end of the article. Article begins, In 1999, the Institute of Medicine, an organization regarded as an authority at the intersection of medicine and society, published a report, To Err Is Human, which found that up to 98,000 Americans were dying annually from medical errors. 20 years later, deadly health care mistakes may be just as prevalent. Official and popular reaction to the 1999 paper was swift. Congress mandated the monitoring of progress in efforts to prevent patient harm, and the healthcare industry aspired to grand goals, like the report's recommendation of reducing medical errors by 50% within 5 years. News outlets tracked the proceedings closely. a remedy for a long-standing problem seemed in sight. But a September 2019 report on patient safety from the World Health Organization found not much has changed. Globally, medical errors harm as many as 40% of patients in primary and outpatient care. Diagnostic and medication errors hurt millions and cost billions of dollars every year. So, what happened? The chain reaction to the 1999 report spent its energy quickly. Contrary to the report's calls for expertise from outside the medical profession, patient safety was taken over by clinician managers and other healthcare administrators, whose interests would hardly have been served by a thorough, paradigm-shifting investigation of the crisis that would have rattled the status quo. These institutional leaders also brushed off experts, parenthetically psychologists, sociologists, and organizational behaviorists, among others. I'll repeat the beginning for clarity. These institutional leaders also brushed off experts who have long offered innovative ideas for reducing health care mishaps. The medical managers had ideas too, but those amounted to localized and weak prescriptions like safety checklists, hand sanitizing stations, posters promoting a culture of safety, and programs inviting low-level staff members to speak their minds to their supervisors. Absent were innovations aimed at bigger classes of hazards, such as look-alike, sound-alike drugs, parenthetically, mix-ups in the medications epinephrine and ephedrine have led to much patient harm, for example. And again, for clarity, I'll go back to the beginning of the sentence. Absent were innovations aimed at bigger classes of hazards, such as look-alike, sound-alike drugs, or confusing and error-inducing interfaces in technology. Patient safety can be tricky to define because it's essentially a non-event. When things are going well, no one wonders why. When a mistake occurs and threatens the unrealistic, quote, getting to zero, unquote, goal of many healthcare managers, then it becomes an event that demands a reaction. And the reaction generally is to assign blame to people further down the organizational ladder. It's far easier, after all, for the industry to fault individual workers on the front lines of medical care than to scrutinize inherent organization and system flaws, or to finger highly paid specialist doctors. This focus on who did wrong and how they did wrong is misplaced. It should be on what's going right and what lessons can be learned from successes. This is how healthcare organizations and the industry as a whole avoid dealing with the troubling task of identifying root causes of the patient safety problem. Meanwhile, the public is assured there is little to fear, parenthetically, and little need for external intervention, because, after all, healthcare professionals are on the job. But clinician leaders and hospital administrators need to realize that healthcare, including its patient safety component, is too big and too complex to be steered only by medical professionals. We live in an era of multifaceted problems that call for multidisciplinary approaches. Advances in anesthesia safety, for example, would not have come without the input of engineers. Experts from outside medicine should be welcomed to any serious discussion of how to improve patient safety, and their insights heeded. Let the words of John Sanders a pioneer of human factors engineering, helped guide a truly reformed patient safety movement. Quote, human error in medicine and the adverse events that may follow are problems of psychology and engineering, not of medicine. Unquote. An important social movement seemed to emerge in the wake of To Err Is Human, but lost its way. With bolder and more comprehensive goals, and by embracing experts from outside the medical profession, the healthcare industry could make patient safety the great social movement it deserves to be. Article by Kathleen Sutcliffe. Sutcliffe is spelled S-U-T-C-L-I-F-F-E. As Time has noted in the bio, co-author of, and the title is, Still Not Safe, Patient Safety and the Middle Managing of American Medicine. Parenthetically, forthcoming from Oxford University Press. Professor of Business and Medicine at Johns Hopkins University. And there are included metrics that are featured in bright red in the heart of the article. It's a review of information in the article. Top metric, 40%. Caption explains, share of global primary and outpatient care patients harmed by medical error, 40%. Middle item, $42 billion. Global annual cost of medication-related errors, $42 billion. Bottom item, $1 million. Caption explains, patients globally who die every year from surgical complications, 1 million. We come now to the regular feature called Lightbox. Normally, it is a two-page photographic spread, and therefore, with our reading, we normally do not cover it or include it because it's visual. But this is a special edition of Lightbox that covers two-page spreads because of the intensity and urgency of the subject. So I will read the informative captions that accompany the photographs. Title is A Family's Grief. And the photograph is described, the day after three mothers and six children were killed in northern Mexico on November 4th, photographer Cesar Rodriguez arrived to chronicle the aftermath at their homes in Lamora. The victims were related, all U.S. citizens, and members of a Mormon community that has lived there for generations. And officials said they may have been mistaken for rivals of the drug cartel that killed them. Quote, they wanted this tragedy to be known, unquote, Rodriguez tells Time. Quote, they wanted things to change in this country, unquote. In this picture, loved ones of Christina Langford Johnson, one of the murdered women, watch as her body is carried away by helicopter. And it's four women ranging in age from teenager to a woman in her 40s or 50s. There are four women. The next page, there is another two-page photograph. The caption says, the coffin of Donna Langford, one of the women killed, is carried to her grave by her brother and husband. Two of her children also died in the ambush. And your reader does not need to describe that scene. The caption says it all. And the credits are photographs by Cesar Rodriguez for El País. We go now to a special section called The Next 100. This profile is entitled Ascendant Conservative. Dan Crenshaw, 35. Observance by Charlotte Alter, who writes, Dan Crenshaw is one version of what the Republican Party might look like after Donald Trump, a decorated Navy SEAL who lost his eye in Afghanistan. Crenshaw was one of just a handful of millennial Republicans elected to Congress in 2018, a year that saw record youth momentum on the Democratic side. In his first year in office, Crenshaw has built a sizable social media following, including more than 1 million Twitter followers, as the right's leading warrior against what he calls, quote, outrage culture, unquote. Crenshaw's path is one preferred by many young conservatives. He defends the president's policies on issues from taxes to immigration. He even live-streamed his ride-along with Border Patrol on Instagram without supporting his erratic tweets or endorsing his most controversial actions. Parenthetically, Crenshaw strongly criticized Trump's decision to withdraw troops from Syria and co-sponsored the bipartisan House resolution opposing the pullout. He's also one of the biggest fundraisers in the House, despite still being in his first term. In 2019, he's collected more than $2.7 million. For those who want a more traditional hard-right warrior, Crenshaw may be a glimpse at the conservative movement's future. Dan Crenshaw, 35. This is accompanied by a mini-metric called Fast Facts regarding Dan Crenshaw. Hometown, Aberdeen, Scotland. Best known for making a cameo on Saturday Night Live to accept cast member Pete Davidson's apology for a past joke. And this is accompanied by a upper head shot, upper body shot of Dan Crenshaw wearing a suit, blue suit, and with a beard and an eye patch on the right. In this same section, the headline is Embodying a Movement, Edward Leung, 28. Observance by Hillary Leung. Leung is spelled L-E-U-N-G. Hillary Leung, writing about Edward Leung, says, Few have seen Edward Leung since he was jailed last year for his involvement in a 2016 riot. But to the thousands of protesters on the streets chanting, quote, Liberate Hong Kong, Revolution of Our Times, unquote, a clarion call Leung himself coined. The 28-year-old is a spiritual leader of the city's month-long protest, and that's months-long protest, unrest. The activist is credited for bringing localism, a movement that advocates for greater autonomy from mainland China, into the mainstream. I'll repeat that for clarity. The activist is credited for bringing localism, a movement that advocates for greater autonomy from mainland China, into the mainstream. His early days as an advocate for independence are seen in the award-winning documentary Lost in the Fumes, which naturally has become essential viewing for the city's protesters, who in October gathered in hundreds outside a court building as he appealed his sentence. Although Leung is unable to join the mass protests from prison, he has offered his support. Back in July, he wrote a poignant open letter to the protesters, encouraging them to fight on. Nora Lamb, who directed the documentary, says, quote, "He has a way of sounding like he always has something new, something provocative and interesting to say," unquote. Hilary Leung, writing about Edward Leung, 28. Sharing the page, the headline is, "Education Advocate, Tabata Amaral, 25. Profile by Sierra Nugent, who writes, "It took 6 minutes for Tabata Amaral to become a political sensation in Brazil. In March, the Congresswoman delivered a searing critique of Education Minister Ricardo Vélez. The video quickly went viral, announcing the freshman is a force to be reckoned with. Though she's now one of far-right President Jair Bolsonaro's most visible critics, Amaral is trying to separate herself from Brazil's bitter partisan divides. It's a complicated task. Her vote in favor of a conservative-backed pension reform plan led to a temporary suspension from her center-left party this summer. But Amaral says fixing Brazil's problems, parenthetically, fewer than half of adults have a high school diploma, for example. And I'll go back to the beginning. Amaral says fixing Brazil's problems will require some new political thinking. Quote, "There is so much between left and right, especially in a moment that is so polarized and in a world that is so complex with all the new technologies," unquote, she says, quote, "we have to find a way in between," unquote. Sharing this page, the caption is, "Bridging the Divide." The profilee is Iman O'Day, 44. Profile by Carl Vick. And before we begin, Iman O'Day. Iman, first name is spelled A-Y-M-A-N. Last name, O'Day, is spelled O-D-E-H. Carl Vick writes, "Ordinarily, it's difficult for a non-Jewish politician to break through in Israeli politics. Arab Israelis may account for every fifth resident of the country, but in its parliament, the Knesset, they are routinely relegated to a corner." All of which makes Iman O'Day, the head of Israel's Arab parliamentarians, all the more extraordinary. As the contest for leadership of the self-declared Jewish state teetered between right-wing and centrist factions, O'Day emerged not only as a possible kingmaker, but also as a stirring new voice for equality and inclusion. Quote, "We have proven," unquote, he says, quote, "that cooperation between people, Arab and Jewish, is the only principled political strategy that will lead to a better future for all," unquote. Carl Vick writing about Iman O'Day. Continuing with this special section, Japan's Bold Future. Shinjiro Koizumi, 38. Profile by Charlie Campbell. On November 20th, in the midst of his third and potentially final term, Prime Minister Shinzo Abe will become Japan's longest-serving prime minister. Many voters already know whom they would tap to succeed him. 38-year-old Shinjiro Koizumi. In his first weeks as the environment minister in Abe's cabinet, Koizumi raised eyebrows by saying he wanted to make the fight against climate change, quote, "sexy," unquote, and, quote, "fun," unquote. But he also had an early success to tout. Yokohama, Japan's second most populous city, joined Tokyo and Kyoto in pledging to reduce carbon dioxide emissions to net zero by 2050. in this section. The headline is Campaigning for a New Generation. Pete Buttigieg, 37. Profiled by Steve Adler. And here, Time notes, Adler, a Democrat, is the mayor of Austin. He writes, Mayor Pete Buttigieg is the answer to the call for a new generation of American leadership. He is a part of a generation that realizes time is of the essence. As Mayor Pete says, his generation came of age with school shootings, will be on the business end of climate change, and risks being the first to be worse off economically than their parents. For the past 5 years, I've watched him lead mayors across the country. Other city leaders stop to listen to what he says and learn from what he does. He answers questions directly, honestly, and empathetically. He is so focused and seriously smart. As mayors do, Pete has shown how an executive can impact lives in real and wonderful ways and achieve concrete results when people are brought together to work toward a common end. We don't need to look backward to find greatness. As a presidential candidate, Mayor Pete gives us hope for a better future. Our country needs a fresh start, and Pete stands for the best America we all know we can be. That's the entire profile of Pete Buttigieg, 37, written by Steve Adler, Democrat, mayor of Austin. Right beside that is another profile. The headline is A New Standard, Elise Stefanik, 35. A profile by Paul Ryan, and Time says Ryan, a Republican, is a former Speaker of the House. And before we do this article, I will spell the name Elise, E-L-I-S-E, last name Stefanik, S-T-E-F-A-N-I-K. Elise Stefanik is a builder. No easy feat in an age when so much of politics is about tearing people down. Elise has built a record as an authentic, respected voice for ideas and common sense. And she's built an organization to recruit more women to run for office in a party that needs more inclusivity. This is a fight she has taken on personally and passionately. Like any good architect, Elise sees around the corner. She's thinking about the big picture when the crowd is scrambling to capitalize on the controversy of the day. Ever since I first met Elise, when she was assigned to be director of debate prep during my run for vice president, she has stood out for her intellect and work ethic. Elise isn't just the future of the Republican Party. She is the future of hopeful, aspirational politics in America. Entire profile by Paul Ryan, Republican, former Speaker of the House. Elise Stefanik, 35. Moving ahead, the headline is Taking On Big Tech. Observance by Ted Cruz. The subject is Josh Hawley, 39. Hawley is spelled H-A-W-L-E-Y. Time notes, Ted Cruz, a Republican, is a senator from Texas. And he writes, Josh Hawley came to Washington as a man on a mission. As young Americans embrace the omnipotent presence of social media in their lives, the U.S. Senate's youngest member is fighting the behemoths of the digital age, from warning about the dangers of screen addiction to working to strengthen privacy protections for children online. The coastal elites behind big tech have met their match in a man from rural Missouri who works with Republicans and Democrats alike to prevent big tech from slithering into America's private lives. The ranks of the conservative movement are filled by a mix of fighters, from high-minded scholars to political warriors. Hawley embodies the best qualities the movement has to offer. Impressive intellectual acumen and populist fire. Combined, these qualities make him a force to be reckoned with. This senator from the Show Me State is showing up. Complete profile by Ted Cruz, Republican senator from Texas. The subject is Josh Hawley, 39. The same margin of the page, the headline is Rallying the Far Right. The subject is Jordan Bardella, 24. Profile by Vivian Walt, who writes, Jordan Bardella was a political neophyte when he led the ticket in last May's European Union elections for Marine Le Pen's far-right National Rally Party. Yet he and his fierce anti-immigrant message edged out President Emmanuel Macron's group, with National Rally coming in first in France. Now a member of the EU Parliament and his party's second vice president, the politician says his priorities are, quote, stopping immigration and protecting our economy, unquote. Bardella's nationalist fervor has been welcomed by Le Pen, who has struggled to define her party's role ever since Macron crushed her in the 2017 presidential race. With his hardline views on the EU, Bardella can now try to define it for her. Vivian Walt writing about Jordan Bardella, 24. And we have run out of time for time. We hope you've gained much from this particular edition. This program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. You've been listening to North Carolina Reading Service. I'm your time reader, Randall Rickman. Thank you once again for joining me and for your patience with your reader's many obvious shortcomings. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. Once again, 919-832-5138. And this broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. Please join us next time for Time.